I think a lot of us in sales look at stories the wrong way. We look at them as some kind of a warm and fuzzy thing, and therefore we dismiss them. So today we're going to actually talk about how you can use stories as a lethal selling weapon. My name is Paul Castain from Castain Training Systems, and I'm the author of the YourSalesPlaybook.com blog and your host for the Sales Playbook Podcast. I've personally trained over 20,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready because school is now in session. Okay, so before we begin, and we're going to be talking about stories today. I actually have a story that I want to share with you, something that I kind of learned. And also, I'm going to be honest with you, kind of like at the end of the story, it's kind of like a tiny infomercial. So I just want to warn you about it. I mean, as if that would be like a huge crime, right? Like, God forbid, I would like try to sell you something, right? But a salesperson trying to sell another salesperson something. Criminal, I know. I should be run out of town. But this week, I had a really great call from someone. And I don't know about you guys, but I always appreciate it when business comes to me, especially since I'm usually making cold calls and sending emails and going to networking events. I just like you guys, I'm in the trenches and I do a lot of hunting. So it's nice when something actually comes to me. And someone had called me up and they wanted to talk about having me come in and be the speaker, the keynote speaker at their sales kickoff meeting in January. And again, we're having this great conversation, everything's awesome, and he offered some really constructive feedback from me. And you know, and that's important too, by the way, because especially if you're in any kind of a leadership role or you're in a teaching role like I am, I mean, sometimes we're the worst people in the world when it comes to like accepting feedback and being coached. And that day, I mean, I gladly put on my humble student's cap and I accepted some really good coaching that this person offered me. And he said, you know, Paul, I did the equivalent of binge watching 20 of your episodes of the Sales Playbook podcast. You know, I guess in his case, it was like binge listening. And he said, in only one of your episodes, did you mention that you do keynote addresses and that you do sales kickoff meetings. And yet, we're in the time of year when people are finalizing their plans and, you know, getting their speakers for these January and February events. He said, you absolutely should be mentioning that, because if I didn't like really like hear that episode, I wouldn't have known and I wouldn't have reached out to you. So I want to let you guys know, because I am a student of sales like everyone listening, that I offer that. So if you've been enjoying the Sales Playbook podcast and you really want to do something different with your sales kickoff meetings, I would advise that either you reach out to me if you are the person who handles that for the company, or you pass along the information that I'm going to give you in about 2 seconds to your boss. So if you'd like to learn more about my sales kickoff meetings and training and live events and things like that, would you please shoot me an email, paul@yoursalesplaybook.com. paul@yoursalesplaybook.com. What I'll do is I will send you some links where you could learn more about my programs, how I go about things, and so on and so forth. So having said that, that's about 3 minutes longer than I like to spend avoiding a topic. And this week's topic is, how can we use stories as a lethal selling weapon? Now, I went through a major change in how I looked at stories. And it's funny because I didn't realize that I had actually been using them all along. And anytime I heard somebody say, well, you know, sales reps should be using stories in their sales pitches and in their demos and so on and so forth, I always thought it was a tad warm and fuzzy. I always thought that stories were more like those things like motivational speakers would tell to tug at the heartstrings of the audience. I always kind of looked at it as something like somebody would utilize in like a TED Talk. I even would think outside of the realm of business and think about stories more from a personal perspective. Like when we get together with friends, what do? We tell stories. We don't realize it, but there's a lot of back and forth, right? We're talking about something and then say, oh, wow, that reminds me. You know, my wife and I did this or whatever. And in fact, I was actually just talking with somebody. It was probably about a week and a half ago. We were having some cigars together, just having a good old time, having a few adult beverages. And I happen to mention that my wife and I were really excited because we're going to be celebrating our 30th anniversary, except we're going to change it up a little this year. You got to do that, right? Keep it kind of interesting in your relationships. And my wife and I are going to be celebrating our 30th wedding anniversary in Bermuda. We're going to go off to the Caribbean, taking a nice cruise. We've got all kinds of really cool things planned. And so not only did I kind of talk about that in kind of storybook fashion and talking about how we've celebrated other anniversaries, then this person went and was sharing some interesting stories about how they spent a recent anniversary and offered some really good tips and everything. So we've been around stories forever, but I think it's the thing in sales that we've been tripping over. Like it's right there in front of us and we don't realize it. So today I want to hopefully change your thinking and share a few examples. So the first example I have is from someone that everybody knows and has probably seen. And when it comes to storytelling, usually is almost become synonymous with amazing storyteller. And then from there, I'm going to take you more behind the scenes and tell you some stories that you don't know and share some examples of stories that I've used and that I've seen in my travels that have really helped in a variety of scenarios. And I promise you, all of these are anything but warm and fuzzy. So I want to start with Steve Jobs. And I want to start right out of the gate by giving you a homework assignment that I think is going to, in and of itself, change how you look at storytelling. And I really believe it's going to teach you just so much about delivery and setup and structure of an amazing story. I want you to go to YouTube. And first of all, you could look up pretty much any kind of presentation that Steve Jobs has done. But what I want you to do more specifically is look at the launches that he's done at Macworld over the years, starting with like the iPod. And the one I'm going to talk about right now that I want you to check out is in 2007 when he introduced the iPhone to the world at Macworld. So what he did was he came out right out of the gate and he kind of let the cat out of the bag. And he said to everyone, we're going to be introducing three revolutionary products. So one of the first things I really liked that he did was, and we call it, the use of intentional language. And so he's using words very much to his advantage, powerful words like revolutionary. And he said, we're going to be introducing three revolutionary products. The first one is going to be a widescreen iPod with touch controls. So the crowd, like, immediately starts, like you know, applauding, and they're, you know, hooting and howling. They love that idea. Then he says the second product is going to be a phone. Everybody, man, went wild. It was even louder than before. And then the third product was going to be a breakthrough internet communication device. And everybody once again applauds. Then he goes and he brings the story to the next level by telling us that it's going to be all in one. So it's not just these three products. They were very happy to hear that he had three revolutionary products to bring out to the world that day and to announce to them. But now they were all in one. So now there's everyone, right? He just comes right out and kicks everyone's ass. But then, quite intentionally, I might add, he introduces villains to the story. And he, you know, the there was several villains, and I'm not going to go through all of them, but what he did was the first villain that he introduced was the fact that the devices on the market and kind of like the current state of technology was such that these were like big, bulky phones back then. I want you to think back, those of you who remember the world prior to 2007 and the launch of the iPhone, these were big, bulky BlackBerry type of devices. And you know, at least 40 to 50% of that device was consumed by a keyboard. So he talked about that. And he said how this keyboard is there, whether you need it or not, and it kind of gets in the way. But also, these keyboards, it couldn't change with technology. So if there was some kind of an update in software or some kind of, you know, breakthrough or whatever, that keyboard very well could become obsolete and you'd have to go out and buy an entire new phone. So that was one of the villains that he talked about. And he also talked about, you know, like the user interface and how that, in a way, like the current state of affairs was kind of like the villain. So he now transitioned in the story to talking about like breakthroughs in technology with like the user interface. And he talked about the first breakthrough in technology with computers and the user interface was the mouse. Then after that, the click wheel, which if you remember back to the iPod, it used the click wheel. And then he goes and evolves it right into the product. And he starts talking about how, you know, the new thing now is a multi-touch type of touchscreen. And he still was like weaving this story and talking about, well, you know, like now there are some of these devices that, you know, for all you naysayers out there, that use a stylus. And he went on to say, you know, like in his own way, he was saying basically what a pain in the ass a stylus is. I mean, they break, you lose them. And he said, you know, we've got the best stylus in the world for you, and it's your finger. But here's the best part of the story, folks, is that he was building anticipation. He had these villains, and he introduced then the hero that was going to kick the villain's ass. But he, at this point, he still hadn't shown the product. So he was building incredible anticipation through the use of story and not relying on showing the product, until usually the way his presentations went and his stories went was that it was shown in the end. Almost like if it were a movie, it would be shown kind of like in the closing credits. So I thought that was very, very interesting. And by the way, I mean, we all know how that story ended, right? So that right there is a story that's not warm and fuzzy to me, but yet it was very, very powerful. But we can use them in so many other different ways. So that is an example of how you can use a story during your demo. So before we go on, I just want to kind of throw these little questions at you that I want you to kind of do some soul searching and just kind of answer honestly or whatever it is. I mean, are you using stories in your demos? And again, remember, they don't have to be warm and fuzzy stories. I mean, are there, you know, can you have kind of the current state of affairs or the challenges that you've discovered or the pain points that you've discovered? Can you have that be, are you using those things as the villain and then showing kind of like the hero in your product or your service or your widget come along and solve these things? So that's the first opportunity. The second thing is, I want to let you know that we can use stories as a means to eliminate and certainly reduce doubt. Because people are skeptical, aren't they? I mean, that's something we talk a lot about here. We talk about how many times people just simply, they don't trust a sales rep. So what we have to do is provide evidence. The use of stories. Stories are a form of evidence that you can use. So I want to tell you a quick story about how I used a story. And in this story, what I decided to do was, the story was really the packaging and the gift wrap, if you will, around a testimonial. And what I did was, back in 2016, I launched a product that was called Prospect Like a Pro. And it went well. I didn't break any records with the launch, right? Going to be straight up honest with you, man. It was over, you know, it was I. That's about it. It was I. That was the extent of it. A few months later, I decided I was going to relaunch it. Now, what I was going to do this time is I was going to relaunch it, not as a live training program, but it's an on-demand program that you could go at your own pace. So what I was able to do this time around that I couldn't do the first time is that now that I had launched this, I had some success stories. So I decided to feature one of these success stories in the form of a testimonial, and I sent it out on an email blast to potential clients who had subscribed to my email newsletter. In the subject line, I just simply called it Deidre's Story. Now, when you opened up the email, I kind of took you very briefly through kind of the background behind what I was about to do. And then what I did was I basically introduced Deidre to tell her story in her own words of what she got out of the program. And she tells a very quick story. And again, it is a testimonial that is kind of more of a narrative. And that one silly, like, testimonial move, right? That one little move that I did, this one simple move, right? It wasn't anything really big and glamorous where I hired copywriters and we took months and months to do this. I just had somebody tell it in their own words. That one testimonial, Deidre's story that I sent out, generated $23,800 in 48 hours. May not sound like a lot to you, but in the sales training world, to have a product that, by the way, that you had, it's just basically taking something off the shelf that you've already done. That was pure profit for me. I had already facilitated that training, so I didn't even have to be there. I was basically selling a recording of something that I had done 4 or 5 or 6 months earlier, whatever it was. It generated $23,800 in 48 hours. But inside of, like, by the end of that launch, it was responsible for about $100,000 in revenue in a very short period of time. Because you got to realize, whenever I do a launch, these are not things that I spend months and months and months. We usually work on a 2 to 4 week window for a launch. So if you really think about those numbers, really not bad for basically taking a testimonial and putting it out there more as a story that people could relate to. So I used the story there to generate quite a bit of revenue. Let me give you another example where we want to eliminate doubt, because that's the first way that I eliminated some doubt, by having people hear it from a peer, right? Because a good testimonial answers the question, well, who says so besides yourself? Well, in this case, Deidre says so. Another story, and I've told it before on this podcast, was like many, many years ago. I actually used a story to sell to a cynic, somebody who is very, not only very, very skeptical, but I really might add that the person was just absolutely just nasty and combative. And I had this meeting with this person. This was back when I sold commercial cleaning. And it was a dentist who's a partner in this dental group that owned multiple centers. I don't remember how many locations it was. It was probably 12 or 15 of these dental centers. So this was a nice contract that we were talking about. And everything that I had to say, this guy would gun down. And I mean, he all but called me a liar. And it was nothing personal. It's just that he had been burned by a lot of salespeople. And I mean, he told me flat out, hey, listen, man, you know, I don't even think he said it as nice as I'm going to say it, but he was just kind of, look, I understand it's your job. You get paid to say positive things about your company. But let's just say that I've been around the block and I know that the, you know, majority of you guys are full of it. And so what I did was I decided in that moment to tell a story about a situation where I was the cynic. And before I tell you guys what the story was, what I believe happened here is it allowed a lesson to be imparted by stepping away from the situation that we were in, right? We were kind of at an impasse. So we were able to step away from it and talk about something else that we were actually able to agree on. and where I was able to get his mind off of the situation at hand and make a point without being like telling him he's, you know, like I'm right and he's wrong. So I told the story. I said, you know, this really reminds me an awful lot of a really bad root canal that I had. And I started telling him about this awful experience that I had. And guys, I mean, it was terrible, this experience that I had with this dentist. I mean, it was so bad that it started off as this root canal. And because of this dentist and just like how horrible he was, I developed this massive infection to the point that they actually thought they were going to have to operate on my jaw. And like, I couldn't talk. And even back then, I mean, being in sales, I mean, don't we use our words like to make a living? So like, I mean, I couldn't like talk. It was a new adventure in pain. I missed multiple days from work. It was just, I mean, and I'll spare you guys all the detail, but I didn't with him, by the way. I mean, I even got into graphic detail about like all kinds of nasty stuff, like pus and all this kind of stuff, which, you know, like we don't want to talk about, but dentist, man, you know, there was no problem. Even he was getting kind of grossed out. But he was like another guy now at this point. He wasn't that miserable dude I was talking to like 30 seconds before. He was completely relating. He was like, oh my God, that's criminal. And like, honestly, I mean, I am not making this up. I really thought at one point he was going to cry. He was so saddened by this story. And like earlier, before, I mean, he was just abrupt and brutal. And, you know, like if you guys think like I curse sometimes, I mean, I was even blushing. I was like, oh my God, man, he's using the F-bomb. And like, he was just nasty. I mean, like prior to that, there was times when he was like going on about salespeople. I actually thought like he was going to kick my ass at one point. He was just like, he had so much anger, this person. But now we went from that, but now I tell the story and it was complete empathy. And he was like, oh my God. And what did you do and all that? And I said, well, you know, I went to another dentist. And he goes, no, good for you, man. You got to do that. You know, it was a good thing that you gave someone else another, you know, a chance to rectify this, because not all dentists are like that. And I just looked at him. Right? I mean, I didn't plan on him kind of saying it himself. And I'm like, yeah, kind of like cleaners, right? And he's like, oh, man. He goes, hey, that was good. And I was like, yeah, I didn't mean it to like end like that. I mean, but I mean, my whole point of telling you the story is that, I mean, can we both agree that, I mean, part of what made it work for me was that, and why I'm sitting here right now, like with my jaw still intact, is that ultimately I had to give the dental profession another chance. And I'm glad that I did. And you even said that you were glad that I did. I'd really like that opportunity. That same opportunity as far as, you know, the cleaning industry. Give me an opportunity to show you that we're not all created equal. And so I walked out with that business. And the only thing that I'm going to say that's going to kind of ruin that whole story, but again, I'm an open book and I'm painfully honest, is that later on, I was really sorry that I sold him. I mean, he was just a client from hell. I mean, really. And then I realized that maybe it wasn't all the cleaners. It was him. You know, I mean, that should have been my sign that he had been through so many cleaning companies. He was just a horrible client. And, I remember looking back saying, why did I have to tell that damn story? So that's another situation right there where you can use stories to help someone who's kind of on the fence or selling to a cynic or somebody who's not really buying what you're selling in that moment. But, you know, case studies, those are stories if you think about it, or at least they should be. How about the use of samples? Samples should be part of a story. So let me give you an example of something. A lot of the work that I did prior to Castaing Training Systems was in the printing industry. In many ways, I tell people that I spent the bulk of my time in that industry, right? I had started in that industry back in 1983 as a pressman. I was in sales in that industry. I owned a printing company. I later went on to work for a billion-dollar company, a billion-dollar printer, as a vice president. I wrote from you know, the very, you know, ground up, I created their sales training program, trained over 850 sales reps in that particular company. So I have a lot of experience in that industry. And one of the things that I noticed about printers is that they love to show you samples, right? And if you're in the printing industry, you're going to go, duh, Castain. And if you've ever bought from a printer, you know that they love to show samples. But the problem is they all sound the same because they show the samples in the same exact way. So one of the things that I went on to train sales reps in the printing industry to do was, like, you never ever just show a sample without telling the war story that goes with the sample. So there's a very big difference in me showing you some beautiful work that I did for Disney versus me showing you a sample of the beautiful work I did for Disney. And then I tell you, by the way, this particular sample represents an 11th hour miracle that we did for Disney. Let me take you through it. Do you see there's a very big difference because now I'm taking them through it. They can experience it with multiple emotions as opposed to, and multiple senses too, as opposed to just like seeing another sample that another printer has come in and showed them. Maybe there's an opportunity for you if you show samples to tell a story. Also, if you use any kind of like before and after type of photos, there's a story that's involved there. You should be telling that story. How about, like we mentioned before, like when you do a demo, that's a story, or at least there should be a story in there. It becomes a lot more entertaining. You're going to stand apart from all your competitors when you weave stories into that. Do you ever like take clients or potential clients on a tour of your facility? A great tour is going to be a story. And let me give you an example of this. A lot of the companies that I worked with and I work with, what they've done, which I think is brilliant, is when clients come in, when they take them on a tour of their facility, it's a story. And many times the story starts kind of and it's told in a way that takes you through the workflow. So in other words, like you're at the beginning of the tour, and they're starting right at pre-flight, and they tell you what happens there. And they introduce you to some, you know, the cast of characters that are involved in that part of the story. And if they've done a really good job with it, each one of those cast of characters, or at least some of the key players, have something that they tell as part of the story that, you know, and how they impact a project. And then you go to the next step in the workflow, and you rinse and you repeat. There was a company that I worked with many years ago. They did something brilliant when it came to this, when it came to tours and having people come in. Not only did they tell the story, but at the very end of the tour, and as the story was winding down, they had that story end in the room that they called. They referred to it as the signing room, never to a client or a prospect, but they referred to it to me as the signing room. So when you're at the end of the story, when you're at the end of this journey, you're ending in a room that is filled with all the industry awards they've received, testimonial letters framed on the wall, before and after pictures, pictures of the person who took me on the tour hanging out with their customers, almost like getting high fives from them. And there was this look on their face. You know that look? Like the moment you drive off the car lot with that brand new car, that look of pride that's on your face, it was that, just to let you know. They captured it brilliantly. But there was a story there. And I'm hoping that you start to use some stories too. But there's some other places too. There is this 90-year-old company that I've done business with. And actually, I've done the training for them. And it's very interesting because when they take you on a tour, they're not just talking about the workflow and everything else. Remember, they have a 90-year plus history. So they took me to this part of the story where there was the most unusual floor that I've ever seen, and it was in the manufacturing area. And in the manufacturing area, I mean, you know, people are on their feet constantly. And the guy told the story because he is the third generation owner of this company, about how his grandfather wanted a floor that was going to be easier on everyone's back So what he did was he took 2x4s and he loaded them in like almost, you know, top down, not like side by side like you would with flooring. I mean, like he took like the entire 2x4 or whatever it was and just like dropped it in so that there would be this tremendous amount of support on one's feet. And then, you know, he just like, they put this beautiful finish on the floor and everything else. So not only does it look very unusual and awesome, and P.S., it's like 90 years old, the damn floor, right? But also, too, it was done to help people that were going to be on their feet all day. So these little stories that we're able to weave into something that usually has a standard operating procedure, a tour, he was able to bring kind of a little bit of like, you know, fun fact into it. But at the same time, what he was doing was, which was absolutely brilliant, he was reinforcing the history and the longevity of this company, 90 plus years. So just as kind of a side note, one of the things that you need to be doing in sales, and I need to be doing it too, is we need to be taking different selling points and different, certainly, benefits and features and things like that, and repeating that message throughout the sales cycle, because we no longer live in a world where people can hear things once and say, okay, I get it, right? I mean, it's always nice when a light bulb goes off immediately, but I think as sales professionals, we're doing everyone a disservice when we only say things once. So what I always say to people is, what we want to do is practice theme and variation. So the theme is whatever it is that you're trying to reinforce. The variation is a varied explanation of that point that you're trying to get out there and reinforce. So there's different ways, in other words, of saying the same thing. So if one of the points this guy wants to get across is that their longevity and that they've been around for 90 years, one of the ways that this person can do it is just say it, right? I mean, shortest distance between two points is a straight line. So absolutely, just say it. But also, how about in the tour? The fact that this person now tells a story. You know, when my great-grandfather or my grandfather, whoever it was, started this company back in whenever the year was, you know, 90 years ago, again, that reinforces it. But I want you to kind of, as another assignment, think about the points that you want to reinforce and think about the different stories that you can use at different parts of the sales cycle to reinforce it. Next, as far as stories go, we can use stories to help people grasp a selling point. We can also use stories to kind of dumb something down. It could be something, again, that might be a little technical and people having a hard time with this. I came across something that I thought was brilliant, and this is like hot off the press. I mean, it happened like probably 3 hours ago. I came across something on Facebook, and there's a person I've mentioned multiple times that I'm just absolutely, like, I just love his approach. And the guy's name is Frank Kern. And he was a student of Dan Kennedy's, who's another rock star. And Frank Kern, he's very, very good at like coming up with a lot of like copy for different email campaigns and internet promotions and things like that. And this particular thing that he was promoting was really like how to, or the benefit of running Facebook ads. And he obviously had a program that he ultimately wants to get you into and everything else. But what he did was he told a very interesting story. And he had you visualize something. And what he did was he said, imagine if you and I were able to jump into a time machine and we were able to go back to Coca-Cola 100 years ago and buy their stock at the price that it went for 100 years ago. And then he just kind of reiterated the point. Again, it's a very simple thing that I want you to imagine. You and I are able to jump into a time machine. With this time machine, we're able to go back 100 years ago and we're able to purchase the Coca-Cola stock at the price that it went for 100 years ago. Now we come back to 2018. Is it? And then he just kind of said, is it safe to say that if we looked at that stock, it would be worth a hell of a lot more than what we paid for it 100 years ago, right? And, you know, of course, I kind of found myself like kind of talking out loud and saying, hopefully I'd be sitting on a lot of money. And he said, and would we all agree that the thing that made this really cool was not only making all that money, but the fact that we were able to get this at such a ridiculously low price, the same price that the stock went for 100 years ago. And again, I found myself saying, yeah, how cool would that be? And I could actually kind of found myself visualizing a scenario where I was able to do that. And because of my mind and my like ADD, I'm thinking of multiple things. I'm like, man, I how cool would that be if I was able to do that with Google stock? Or how about like Apple stock, all right? I mean, we could think about so many things like that, that we were able to, if we were able to have that time machine. So then he brought the point home and he said that what's going on right now with internet advertising, like especially like on like Facebook, being able to take out ads, it's the equivalent of being able to get that Coca-Cola stock. And what he went on to say was that we're living in a time now that we can get someone's attention for a nice chunk of time on Facebook, like 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes with some of these ads that we can take out with video ads and things like that. And we're able to get it at such a ridiculously low price. And like anything else, like that Coca-Cola stock, it's not going to remain at that level forever. Now, he's obviously not selling Facebook ads, right? He doesn't work for Facebook. What he ultimately is going to be doing through relationship marketing is earning your trust so that you'll allow him to coach you on Facebook ads and things like that. But what he did in the meantime, and he did it brilliantly, inside of about 30 to 60 seconds. Now, I didn't do it justice because I was kind of teaching you what he did. But if you happen to catch the video that I'm talking about, inside of 30 to 60 seconds tops, he was able to break down something that a lot of people who don't like partake in Facebook ads, they just really wouldn't be able to comprehend. He was able to take a more complicated kind of concept and have you fully understand it in layman's terms inside of 30 to 60 seconds. And then from there, he was just able then to transition that conversation more toward where he wanted to go with it. So I thought that was brilliant. But again, I want to be very clear. The use of a story was at play there. Now, stories can be used for a lot of different things, right? And I gave you guys several different examples. We could also use them. I want you to think about different parts of the sales cycle. We could be using them in our emails. We could be using stories in our cold calls. We can be using stories to field an objection or to kind of like do a preemptive strike on an objection. That's the best way, by the way, to handle an objection before it even happens. We could be using stories at networking events. I mean, aren't we doing a form of a story already when people say, you know, well, tell me about yourself, right? For those of you like job hunting, I mean, isn't there a story right there when somebody says, tell me, you know, tell me about yourself? That's a story, or at least it should be. We also can and should use stories in social networking. I mean, you know, in fact, I'm not going to get into it right now, but I teach a concept called micro stories, where just like little mini stories. Many times we can do it with a visual type of what I call, it's not my term, but it's what we refer to as snackable type of content. But we could tell like kind of a like micro story. But stories certainly can be warm and fuzzy. I'm not going to lie. I mean, using emotions to get someone off that fence of indifference, it can be a very powerful thing. So I'm not going to go and dismiss the warm and fuzzy stories and how powerful they can be in sales. But I want you to understand that it goes beyond the warm and fuzzy. And it's certainly not something just reserved for motivational speakers or somebody doing a TED talk or like when we tuck the kids in at night or like the war stories that you and I would tell at the bar if we were able to have a beer together. So I want you to think beyond the warm and fuzzy. And I want you to start thinking about this from every part of the sales cycle. And I want you to start thinking about how you can utilize it. Now, one last point that I want to bring up. I decided to launch a new webinar, and it's something I've never done before, right? I'm trying this year to introduce things that I haven't sold before, things that are going to take me out of my comfort zone, things that you guys are going to say, oh my gosh, man, I've never had an opportunity to learn that from Paul. We're going to actually be doing a webinar on October the 11th, and it's actually called The 7 Stories Every Sales Rep Must Tell. And I'm going to take you through stories that you should be using at every phase of your sales cycle, whether it be you're approaching a company or whether you're on the phone with them, whether you're at a networking event, whether you're in a social networking channel, whether you are meeting with somebody face to face, whether somebody throws an objection at you, or how about like selling change in an organization? I mean, would you guys agree that sometimes stories can be very, very powerful? I mean, you guys are selling change many times, right? And how about those of you listening who need to sell a change in your own organization? Maybe a story might just help you. I mean, it's a powerful selling tool. So we're going to talk about that, and I'm going to take you through 7 stories I think every sales rep obviously should be using. I'm going to take you through the structure of a good story. I'm going to take you through several, like another 6 or 7 different flight plans, if you will, like structures to a really good story. And of course, I'm going to have lots and lots of actual examples. So this isn't going to be just like a bunch of theory. I try really not to go there. If you notice that with my podcast, I don't really like to get into like a lot of philosophical stuff, because philosophical stuff is great for making somebody look really, really smart. That's about it. But there's really a lot of the time, like no practical application. The way I like to go with things is that we have actionable tips, and that's where I'm going to go. And you can count on from me a good 25 or so actionable tips. Now, if you want to learn more about this, what I'd like for you to do is go to yoursalesplaybook.com/stories, plural, stories. yoursalesplaybook.com/stories. You can learn about it. My advice to you is don't put it off. If it's something that this appeals to you, at least go to yoursalesplaybook.com/stories. Hear what I have to say. Look at what we're going to be talking about. I even put a little video on there telling you about like how I used to think about stories and something that changed in my own business that made me look at stories very, very differently, and then made me go on to create very specific stories that I used to sell more. So again, if you want to learn more, go to yoursalesplaybook.com/stories. Make sure you sign up. And with that, I'm Paul Castain from yoursalesplaybook.com, and I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them. The Sales Playbook Podcast is a Castain Training Systems production.